Welcome back to Insight on Cap Radio.
I'm Beth Ruiak. 8 years ago, in January of 2012, I guest-hosted Insight after the original host, Jeffrey Callison, had announced that he was leaving to take a new job. Within months, I became the permanent host. Then, fast forward to the next year, NPR's popular call-in show Talk of the Nation was canceled, and Neil Conan's popular weekly guest, the political junkie Ken Rudin, essentially became a free agent. He started surfacing on NPR affiliates across the country. That's how he ended up joining us at Cap Radio. And here's a bit of our first show. This is from November 25th, 2013. I'm speaking with the political junkie, Ken Rudin, and you might have enjoyed him on NPR's Talk of the Nation, which, as we just mentioned, was canceled this past summer. But we hope to hear you more often here on Insight. And of course, you have the Political Junkie podcast, and your work goes on in a lot of arenas, Ken.
I cannot be stopped.
You will not be quieted. Let's talk about California senators, Dianne Feinstein and Barbara Boxer. So we did a lot of California politics, but we did a lot of laughing, too. And it's been a lot of fun since then. Ken's joining us again from the Washington, D.C. area for our last on-air chat together. Hello, Ken.
I'm going to miss you so much, Beth.
We have had
I'm not even the mayor of Stockton, and I miss you.
I listened to that little clip, though, and I realized those were our younger selves, Ken. A lot's happened since then.
You know something? I always used to say that we all aged a lot since 9/11, but my goodness, talk about younger selves. We certainly aged a lot in the last 3 to 4 months alone. And so, I mean, I hate losing you at a time of terrible crises, but I think of those, and those days weren't so great either. I mean, you think of, you know, everybody says, oh, that was great. We had President Obama in office. Well, Obama's numbers weren't that great either. And that's why the Republicans picked up so many seats in 2014, because they were unhappy with Obama. And there was still plenty of gun violence and police shootings. So, you know, you always talk about the old days, thinking of them as better than they are now. And maybe they were, but we've gone through a lot of ups and downs as far as what this country has gone through in the past 7 years.
Well, the old days can become the new days in a different way. In fact, people still bring up Talk of the Nation. And yet during the COVID months this year, NPR created a national call-in show to address COVID questions.
Wow, what a great idea. Wow. How'd they ever think of that? That's great. That's great of them. A lot of good foresight on their part.
All right. Well, let me bring you back to that first show again and what you were just talking about, President Obama's polling numbers. So I'm going to highlight one more clip from that show.
If you look at the numbers that President Obama has in all the latest polls, his negative ratings are the highest ever. His numbers on trustworthiness. Now, whatever you say about President Obama, the question about trustworthiness was never an issue. But, you know, as he said over and over again in 2008 and since then, that if you like your insurance company, if you like your health care policy, you can keep it. As it turned out, that may not be the case. And the Republicans are gleeful, saying, told you so. And Democrats are running for their lives, so fearful of what's going to happen in 2014.
Obama's numbers, his negatives, had never been higher. Isn't that some perspective?
It is, because, I mean, so many people say now, oh, if we only had Barack Obama. And, of course, Barack Obama is aware of the difference between the perception of him during those years and what's going on now. And, you know, there was a great article in the New York Times the last day or so, and basically saying that he would love to just disappear and work for some kind of a charity group and things like that, but he can't be quiet given the fact that Donald Trump basically was elected to, in his mind, in Trump's mind, to undo everything that Barack Obama did. So this has become personal, and given the fact that Barack Obama is probably the most popular Democrat in the country, other than Michelle Obama, I think he's not going to be quiet for these next 4.5 months.
Strategically, too, it's a novel presidency, just like we have a novel coronavirus, because this sort of campaigning or inability to campaign or speaking from your basement at times or wearing a mask, none of this has ever happened before. So employing anybody and everybody on both sides, I think, is something we're going to see a lot of in different ways over the next 5 months, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And you're going to see it probably no more clearly than in the two respective conventions. President Trump, of course, wants a big coronation in Jacksonville in the third week of August. And he's going to have what he wants. He couldn't get what he wanted in Charlotte, so they moved the convention to Jacksonville. And there's not going to be social distancing. There's not going to be, masks, or masks will be optional. Whereas Joe Biden very well may have a convention in Milwaukee where he's alone on the stage. And I think the contrast to the two different approaches to this calamity, to this pandemic, will be most apparent during the conventions.
I'm talking with Ken Rudin, the political junkie. And since we're talking about the presidential race, Joe Biden has not yet announced a running mate. And the speculation intensified around California Congresswoman Karen Bass lately. So let's talk about that choice and Karen Bass, Kamala Harris, and the other names that are on the list.
Well, I do see that Karen Bass is on the list. I can't imagine the Biden people picking her over Kamala Harris, for example. Not that they have to decide between two African-American women in California. Karen Bass, very well-respected member of Congress, former Speaker of the California Assembly. She's smart. She's innovative. She knows her stuff. She's well-regarded, as I said. She's also 66 years old. And again, she'll be 70. I've always said that the vice president doesn't mean that much. And we always turn to Geraldine Ferraro. Oh, my goodness. They picked Geraldine Ferraro in 1984. This is the greatest thing ever. And Mondale Ferraro lost 49 states. So ultimately, I've always said that the VP, other than Lyndon Johnson in 1960, doesn't mean that much. But this time it does. Joe Biden is going to be 78 years old in November. He's going to be the oldest president ever elected, if he is elected. And just actuarial tables alone suggest that his running mate could be the future of the Democratic Party, if not the president. You never know what's going to happen. But the fact is, the choice is meaningful. So he has a lot of choices. He limited his choices to picking a woman, as he said in the last final debate with Bernie Sanders. But my goodness, there's no shortage of women to be chosen from among, and I'm not sure if that was English, but the choices are wide and varied. And, there's a surplus of riches in his choices.
Well, woman is one thing, but Amy Klobuchar said she thinks that the choice should be even more specific than that. And she's not the only one saying it.
Yeah, she said that it should be a woman of color. And of course, I'm sure that Elizabeth Warren didn't like that so much. We keep talking about, every time there's, like, for example, a horrific act of gun violence, we always like in Newtown, in Sandy Hook with the children, or the slaughter of black parishioners in Charleston. We always say, this time it's going to make a difference. This time people will really stand up to the gun lobby, and nothing ever changes. But I think that the killing, the murder of George Floyd and others like that, I think this is really a serious sea change. And I think people are understanding systemic racism more than they ever did. And when I say people, I mean white people. I think white people are understanding, coming around to understanding the horrors of systemic racism more than ever before. And so I don't think of picking a black running mate would necessarily be tokenism at all. I think, given the fact that Joe Biden would not be the Democratic nominee had it not been for African-American voters, as we saw in South Carolina at the end of February, My goodness, Beth, I was just thinking, the last time I got on a plane, it was to see you
right
in early March, and that was Super Tuesday.
Yeah.
And that seems like a million years ago, but that was the beginning of Joe Biden, once considered down and out among the possible Democrats for president, and the black vote on Super Tuesday in South Carolina, in addition to all the other states who was winning. It just seemed to change right then, and I guess I credit Joe Biden's success by the fact that I get on that plane.
Well, I'm noticing something else, Ken. You and I have had so many conversations over the years in which I'm saying something optimistically, that I believe there can be change, that I'm hopeful and emphatically hopeful to my core. And you kind of humor me and say, well, that's great, and I wish it was true, but the reality is these things don't change. They haven't changed. You know, they won't change. And you know what? You're saying something different today. Different.
Well, I am and I'm not, because I was listening to Mayor Tubbs talk before, and, you know, I love the things he said about poverty and police violence and things like that. But when he was talking about the response to COVID-19, he said, I hope this is a wake-up call. And I almost fell off my chair. My goodness, if 120,000 deaths and what was going on around the country, the quarantine and the shutdown and the millions of people out of work, if that was not a wake-up call, the fact is people are still going to the beach and they're still not wearing masks and they're following their president who says that this is just a hoax. It just drives me crazy. So I hate the fact that I've shown some optimism today, Bev, because the old Ken Rudin is back again, because there's so much pessimism. The fact is people stopped washing their hands after the first go around because they thought, well, things are getting a little better. I just look at what's happening in Texas and in Florida and in Arizona and other states where they've kind of like let down their guard. And people are suffering again, and the infections are rising, and people, of course, will be dying. And how many deaths do you need? How many headlines do you need before people say, oh, this seems pretty serious. This is more important than opening up a business or so. So you know,
you can do, what's in the scope of your ability. You can sit behind a microphone and say, please take these safety precautions. Please take this seriously. You can do it as the leader of a city or a county. The governor can toggle back on restrictions. But look at Dr. Anthony Fauci right now. He's essentially on a speaking, visiting tour, and he's talking to young people. He's saying the same thing in a approachable, conversational way and saying, please listen. It might not be you. You might be fine. You might survive this. You might, though, pass it to someone who then passes it to a grandmother or a grandfather or a neighbor. And I think every avenue of conversation has to be tried, Ken, because we don't know what might work for you or your neighbor differently than for me or, you know, my mother. And all we know is that we all have to keep trying. And I think that's why I end up always on this side of the conversation.
No, I agree with you completely. But the fact is that when you don't have the leadership from the president of the United States who doesn't take this seriously, as one would think. Anthony Fauci is one thing. President Donald Trump, who says, well, you know, I don't know about a mask. Now, Mike Pence said people should be wearing masks. He said this at the end of June 2020, 3-4 months later, which is pretty remarkable. I hate to whine. I hate to be negative. I've always loved the optimism in your voice. And after all the, you know, the 7 years we've been on the show together, when there was always the invariable act of gun violence, you would always say, maybe Congress will pay attention. Maybe opinions will change. And they never do. So I think one thing I want to leave you with, not that we're getting off the show anytime soon, but one thing I want to leave is that I hope you're right. I want there to be more Beth Ruryaks in the world, saying that I believe in the better good of the American people. And I'm just hopeful one thing that is not changing, I am as hopeful as you are.
Well, there are tipping points. It may take a long time to get there, but there are tipping points.
I've been tipping a lot lately.
Hey, I think we missed talking about Kamala Harris in the vice presidential race, and I'd like your thoughts on her chances.
Well, you know something? I think, look, like once Amy Klobuchar said it's not going to be me, it should be a woman of color, Kamala Harris was the first name I thought of because, one, she was vetted. People know she is. I think she didn't do great in her presidential bid. Otherwise, she wouldn't have dropped out of the race so early. But I think we saw her in the Senate Judiciary Committee during the Kavanaugh hearings. I think she's effective. She could be tough. She could be gentle as well. There was a lot of feeling that maybe she talked herself off the ticket when she laced into Biden during an early debate when she criticized him for his views on busing. Remember, she says, that little girl was me. That was a very memorable quote. And then she talked about his dealings with segregationist senators. And I read somewhere that Jill Biden was very upset with her from that. But apparently that all is forgiven, that the Biden family has warmed up to Kamala Harris. It seems like the people who have not warmed up to Kamala Harris are basically, I don't know how to call this or what to call this, other than African-American activists who feel that as District Attorney of San Francisco, as Attorney General of California, she was more interested in law and order policies rather than helping the poor and the communities of color. So I know there are a lot of black activists who say this is not going to be a good change. The latest flavor of the month or the flavor of the day has been Tammy Duckworth. There was a very intense and really well-written column by Frank Bruni of the New York Times over the weekend that basically talked about how Tammy Duckworth, who remember she was the woman who got her legs blown off when her helicopter was shot down in Iraq. And, you know, she is understated. She comes from a safe Democratic state. It's not that she'd win Illinois for Biden, just like Kamala Harris wouldn't win California. But she would be a tremendous, when you think of Donald Trump and the bone spurs, and you think of Tammy Duckworth and the sacrifice she made in service to her country. Again, not that every VP matters that much, but I think the contrast would be just you know, pretty dramatic and stark. And you know how the president likes to mock Democrats, you know, Sleepy Joe and Pocahontas and all that. Let him try that with Tammy Duckworth. So there's a new flavor this week.
So we all have to change and kind of get with the times. And sometimes you and I say and do things that are of a different era, shall we say. So I actually, on my way out, I think I'd like you to retire that phrase, flavor of the month or flavor of the week.
Okay.
I think that's gone
by. I'll never say it on your show again.
Thank you, because I think the popular choice or the person that's moved up on the list or something like that is really of the times and of the attention. And I think we're all going through those adjustments. One question I want to ask you, Ken, is to what degree you think this era right now is going to launch a whole new generation of political reporting and kind of an investment in the kind of job you started out doing?
You know, that's a great question. And I mean, given the fact that you have the president who calls the media the enemy of the American people, which sounds so Stalinistic, but I came of age even before Watergate when it came to journalism. I mean, I just loved politics. I loved reporting about politics. And honest to God, before Donald Trump, there's no way anybody could have seen me as a Democrat or Republican, because I wasn't a Democrat or Republican. I just believed in civility and decency. So I kind of think that in addition to all the new class of politicians, and we saw that a lot in New York and during the primaries last week, when many African-Americans and people of color are becoming like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and joining, rather than standing on the outside, joining. And I think there are a lot of people who feel that journalism is a valued profession. And God knows we need the truth about what's going on, you know, bringing truth to power, no matter who is in the White House. We needed it during Clinton, we needed it during Bush, we needed it during Obama, and we certainly need it during Trump. So hopefully there are more and more people interested in this line of business. Having said that, There are more and more newspapers that are going under than ever before.
Right.
It breaks my heart that more and more cities are going without newspapers. They're becoming online. And I think the flavor of the month, no, I'm kidding. No, I shouldn't do it. I'll never do that again. But I really think that
irascible.
Newspapers and journalism,
irascible.
We need that so much. We need a media, a press to keep us honest, to keep the government honest, to keep the people honest, to keep the people informed. And when you have a government that just diminishes everything they say as fake news, it's disheartening. So I would like to think more and more people will take journalism courses in high school and college, work for their radio station, their college radio station. The future sounds like a Dan Quayle joke, but the future is here almost. And it's not only tomorrow, it's here now. And we rely on them because certainly the current generation didn't do such a great job.
Well, let's wrap up with one more bit of sound from that first show. Speaking of the future, at that point in time, 2013, a bit of the future was a person named Jerry Brown. He was expected to run for his fourth term as governor. So let's listen, Ken, to a little bit of what you said.
He's getting things done that nobody thought would get accomplished. The Republican Party, as in many states, seemed to be in disarray. And, you know, I never thought I'd say it, but at the age of 76, whatever it is he'll be next year, he's the odds-on favorite to win another term.
Okay, with that, we'll pause for today, but I have a feeling you have a whole lot more to say, don't you?
Oh, yeah, matter of fact, even after we hang up, I'm going to still be talking.
You're going to still talk?
Yes.
That's how it went.
You know,
week after
that,
week.
I feel that every time I get off the phone with you, every time I get off the show, I still sit here at my desk and I'm still talking because there's so much more to say. Do you realize in that first show, the name Donald Trump never came up?
Wow, that's true. Well,
that's right. We've
definitely made up for it since then, and
we certainly did.
All right. As we close, give me an adjective or two for how you think this presidential race is going to be over the next 5 months.
Oh, my. Well, ugly is the word that comes to mind. I really wish that I could just go to sleep now and maybe wake up November 4th and not have to see the ugliness and the vituperation and the meanness. And look, you know, we saw it in 2016. It's going to be worse in 2020, especially if the president thinks he's on the losing end. And apparently he does. And when the president is cornered, he lashes out more than ever. So I'm just hoping that more and more people will have the Beth Buryak optimism and make sure to vote. If nothing else, no matter who you vote for, make sure you vote, because that's what a strong democracy desperately needs.
All right, Ken, thank you so much for years of political reporting, for your insights, for your friendship that has evolved over our time on the air. I'll miss this every week, but stay in touch and take care, okay?
Beth, why are you leaving me? Goodbye, Beth. I'll miss you. I miss you already.
We never really leave each other, do we? Best wishes to you and your family. Thanks a lot, Ken.
Thanks, Beth.
That's Ken Rudin, the political junkie. And I do want to tell you that I am seeing on television coverage right now that the Joseph DeAngelo hearing is underway. He is seated with a plexi face shield in his orange jumpsuit at a table with his public defender attorneys in a room with maybe not as many people as you might have expected, socially distanced and spaced apart. So do listen to our coverage throughout the day from Cap Radio's reporter Scott Rodd. And in fact, we are hearing that the plea deal was in fact just announced at that hearing. This is expected to be dozens of charges that Joseph DeAngelo is pleading guilty to today. So stay with us for continuing coverage. This is Insight on Cap Radio.